And so I just wanted to sort of present a kind of everyday life of a group of Muslim people as they live it, and hopefully show people how much of it is not surprising, not very different than their own lives.
That's John O'Brien, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. John O'Brien is an assistant professor of sociology at New York University, Abu Dhabi. He joins us to talk about keeping it halal, the everyday lives of Muslim American teenage boys. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
In the introduction to your book, you start out by saying what the book is not about. It's not about the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, terrorism, etc. Why did you feel it was important that you make that clear from the very beginning?
Well, I think a lot of people have misconceptions about Muslims and about Islam, especially people in the United States, most of whom don't personally know any Muslim people. So a lot of the messages that people get about Islam are through the media, reports of violent conflicts in other countries, or stereotypes in movies or TV shows. So I just want to clarify that what people may associate with Islam is questions of terrorism and violence, when for most Muslims worldwide and most Muslims in the United States, this has really nothing to do with their everyday lives.
Now, you have a unique perspective here because you grew up as a Catholic youth, but you converted to Islam. Tell us about how that change came to be in your life.
I was raised Catholic, not particularly practicing, but definitely identifying Catholic, going to church and going to Sunday school. And I always felt kind of a kinship to religion and spirituality, but I sort of fell away from that particular religion as I got older because, as I said, it wasn't really a central part of my family. But I learned about different religions through high school and college, and I was always sort of spiritual in nature, I think. And then I met some friends in college who were Muslims, including my future wife, and so learned about the religion through her and really came to respect it and actually find many things in common with Catholicism and other religions that I knew about, and just chose to become part of it. And it's been a good thing for me, and I think exposed me also to a lot of people that I wouldn't have known otherwise. And by getting to know many Muslims in person, I really saw how little my non-Muslim friends and other people I know really knew about Muslims. And so that really kind of opened my eyes to this gap of knowledge, I guess you could call it, between non-Muslims and Muslims in the U.S.
What led you to observing this group of Muslim teenagers that you feature in the book?
Yeah, so I was a graduate student in sociology, and methodology I was learning, we have many ways of studying people in the social world. We can do surveys, we can do interviews, we can do polling. But my method was called ethnography, which is where you spend a long time with one group of people, really observing their daily life and kind of getting a sense of the rhythm and concerns of just their everyday existence. And so I had sort of volunteered at a mosque that I had heard about not far from where I was living through basically friends of friends. And I had a hunch that it would be an interesting place to do some research for my graduate program. And I clicked with this one group of young people, I think, because I had kind of, I think being Muslim was part of what helped me get in the door in a way. But I think working with these young people was very attractive to me because I had had a lot of experience working with youth in previous jobs before I went to graduate school. So I just sort of clicked with this one group of boys, and I noticed how much they were kind of talking about and thinking about and trying to figure out how to be both good Muslims, which was sort of required by their religious community and family and themselves, and also try to fit in with mainstream American teenage culture. And so they really interested me for that reason.
Well, you're right that you went in with some assumptions about these teenagers that turned out to be totally not true, or at least not to the extent that you thought it would be.
Yeah, it's true. So, you know, as you mentioned earlier, one of the kind of stereotypes people can have of Muslims is that they're somehow connected to or linked with violence or terrorism or aggression. But another stereotype in one way is that they're always dealing with kind of constant harassment and discrimination. And that's kind of what I expected to find. Now, that was part of their life. And I want to make clear that actually I did this research some years ago. So I think the climate has actually changed and there is more harassment going on actually now than was at the time I did my research. But at least at this time, there were so many other concerns in these young people's lives, which I think many of us would relate to if you've ever been a teenager or known a teenager, romantic relationships, trying to be cool and fit in, trying to have some independence from your parents, but still kind of want to stay part of the family. And so I really just it struck me how kind of quote-unquote normal these concerns were, but yet how they were also trying to balance them with trying to be good Muslims at the same time.
So let's sort of compare and contrast that. What similarities did you find between these Muslim teens and mainstream American teens?
Well, I think it turns out when you look at kind of the research on mainstream American teenagers or even think about maybe people's own experiences, they're often trying to kind of balance these different cultural expectations. What I call in the book, they're kind of leading culturally contested lives, meaning there are various groups that they want to associate with. You want to both be part of your family, but also part of this certain clique at school, or you want to be someone who's good at sports, but also someone who fits in with this group that's into this kind of music. And so trying to balance these various identities is something that many of us have in parts of our lives. But when you're a young person, it's happening particularly intensely because it's such a time of life when people are forming their identities and are kind of buffered between these different parts of their lives. And so for these young people, I think it was in some ways a more dramatic example of that, but not very different from what many kinds of teenagers deal with, particularly teenagers who have some kind of cultural or religious background that may not be exactly like most people in their community or country. So, you know, conservative Christian young people, or, you know, ethnic or racial minority young people, or immigrant young people. And these were immigrant young people as well as Muslims. So I think many young people face this kind of dilemma. And so in a way, what I found was that these young people were different in a sense because they were Muslim, but in balancing these different cultural expectations, they were actually quite like most other American teenagers.
Well, you point out that these teenagers are resourceful in figuring this out because they want to participate in popular culture, but yet at the same time, they also need to adhere to their religious beliefs. Tell us about how they tried to sort of thread that needle and find that balance.
Yeah, it was really an ongoing and very sort of a nuanced process. And only by, I think, watching them over time did I kind of catch some of the ways they did this. But one major concern was about music. And for many young people, music is a very important part of their life and how to sort of broadcast coolness to their friends and feel a sense of identity. And for these kids, it was really about rap music, which is still, of course, enormously popular and was at the time I did my research. The problem with rap music is, of course, a lot of the content of it can be very sexual, involve a lot of bad language, involve references to drugs and alcohol. And all of these things are not things that mesh very well with a proper kind of Muslim lifestyle. And so they really sought to kind of listen to this music and kind of gain the cool factor from it without falling prey to these kind of behaviors that they knew were not acceptable to be a good Muslim. And so they would do small things like change the lyrics to songs and add in more appropriate lyrics or make up their own versions of songs or even tiny things like, you know, turn down the part of the song where there's a bad word and then turn it back up again. And so over time, I kind of saw them doing this and noticed that at least for them, it kind of worked and allowed them to both feel like sort of American teenagers while also feeling like they were being good Muslims.
Well, another part of that teenage experience is the dating scene. And there are certain norms of the American dating scene which run into conflict with their parents and their religion. So how did they deal with that tension?
Yeah, that was definitely a central one. And when I look back at I took a lot of notes in this process of doing an ethnography. You write down pretty much everything that happens and sort of look back at your notes. And this was really the one that came up the most frequently. And again, not that surprising given that it's an adolescent group of kids, but the issue of romantic relationships, which are, of course, happening among their peers at school, and they're learning about them, you know, through movies and TV and media and just kind of the hormonal regularities of teenage life. But yeah, it was in tension with some of their communal expectations of parents and religious leaders who really kind of said, you know, this is something that needs to wait. If you want to get married to someone, you can say that and, you know, spend time with them, but the family has to know about it and there can be no physical intimacy of any kind. And, you know, this isn't too unlike what we would see in some conservative Christian communities or even some sort of traditional immigrant communities. But it was hard for them to figure this out. So there was definitely some hiding these relationships from parents. And there was, you know, often an attempt to kind of combine these romantic relationships with religious practice in a way that made them feel more appropriate. And that's actually where the title of the book, Keeping It Halal, comes from, which is the idea that some of the relationships that I heard about them telling me about. And by the way, I should say it took them about 2 years before they started telling me about any of this, because it's such a kind of sensitive topic. And I really had to build up trust with them to have them open up about this. But this kind of keeping it halal model really involved talking to this partner and saying, you know, we're not going to kiss, we're not going to hug, we're going to do this in an Islamically appropriate way. But that was very difficult. And this is also found to be true among sort of conservative Christian young people who try to have these kind of abstinence pledges and be part of a relationship but not become physically intimate. It's very hard to maintain that, even if you're very idealistic and you want to do, you know, keep true to your religion. There's a lot of pressures that can pull you away from that.
You mentioned that this study was done a few years ago. You followed up with a couple of those teens more recently. What have you learned about how their lives have changed since the time you did this study?
So there's been a couple of follow-ups, and some that aren't even really in the book because I sort of stay in touch with them. But the ones in the book, they sort of had moved a little bit away from their neighborhoods. They had started working more. They were more in the early college years. And that was a time when they were really, I think, experimenting more with some of what we would call normal kind of college experimentation behavior. There was some drinking going on. There was some more intensive dating going on. And so I saw that happen more, which is pretty typical for kids getting away from the home and neighborhood. But they were still often seeing these things through kind of an Islamic lens and talking to each other about, you know, is this appropriate? Is this right? How does this fit in with being a Muslim? And so I had a sense, and I don't know for sure, that they would still probably, you know, maintain this kind of Muslim identity and practice over the long run. But definitely these kind of young adult years are times when many people are experimenting more with these kind of behaviors. But sort of a more informal check-in I had done with them more recently is kind of since this, the President Donald Trump coming into office and really making some anti-Muslim statements as part of his election campaign, and their lives became a lot more full of, I think, fear and trepidation since then. They would worry more about their mothers walking to work and, you know, things happening to their Muslim friends potentially in the street. And so I think that has really changed the climate as well.
You mentioned this earlier, but I wanted to give you a chance to expand on this in terms of what you hope readers will learn from this glimpse into the lives of these Muslim teens.
I think people assume a real inherent difference about Muslims and everybody else. I think if you don't know a Muslim person, and this is part of, I think, why it's important, is that it's less than 1% of the U.S. population is Muslim, which means in practice that most people just don't have the chance, most Americans don't have the chance to personally know someone who's Muslim. So what you're information you're getting about Islam is constantly coming at you from different sources, from the media, you know, from things that you hear, from rumors. And so I just wanted to sort of present the kind of everyday life of a group of Muslim people as they live it, and hopefully show people how much of it is not surprising, not very different than their own lives. And it does have some complexities that have to do with their identity. But as I said before, I think that's something that all of us deal with. And so that really makes these young people very much like most other Americans.
John, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you. I had a great time.
John O'Brien's book is Keeping It Halal, The Everyday Lives of Muslim American Teenage Boys. He joined us by phone from Abu Dhabi. More interviews on a wide variety of topics are available at kpr.ku.edu/conversations. We're also on Facebook at KPR Conversations. You can use our KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.